Hi there. Please be aware that this episode of Cloak & Dagger can be emotionally challenging for some, as it contains content about the physical and sexual abuse of children. To be honest, this is one of the most difficult things I have ever worked on, so please do take care when listening. This is Cloak & Dagger, a podcast about OSINT, technology, and global conflict. I'm MJ Benias. This podcast is powered by Sapper Labs Group. For more, visit www.sapperlabs.com.
It's a really old brick building, and I have to text my buddy here, my contact, because they keep the doors locked for obvious reasons. So I just gotta let him know I'm here. Shoot a quick text. What he says here.
I'm parked outside an old brick building in Winnipeg. That's a city in Canada. It's yellow limestone, faded and weathered by years of snow and rain. This used to be a residential school, one of many in the country, a place where the Canadian government decided to send Indigenous kids to learn the Queen's English, to fear someone else's god, and to essentially destroy any connection they may have had to their culture. And these were sites of abuse and violence where many children died at the hands of adults. It is an inexcusable part of our history.
Oh, there he is. Hey, how's it going, man?
We occupy these two buildings. This is an old residential school.
The building still remains, but it houses something else. Something that fights for good, that protects kids instead of harms them. Yet, it has to still keep its doors locked all the time for security and safety reasons.
There's a lot of people here.
What's that?
There's a lot of people here. How many?
80
staff.
80. The other building's jam-packed with people. This is like our overflow.
I'm at the Canadian Centre for Child Protection. It's a non-profit organization that works to continuously monitor the internet for child sexual abuse material, also known as CSAM. And by using OSINT, technology, and a serious level of guile and ingenuity, has brought down some of the largest child pornography rings in the world.
It would be like if I told you that Bell MTS or AT&T had been hosting, was one of the largest hosters of CSAM in the world. That's the scale of what that was. Like, I know Free isn't a household name in North America, but in Europe, it's a big company.
This is Jacques Marcoux. He's the director of research and analytics here at the center. He and I have known each other for a few months now. The dude is basically the best data cruncher out there. He sees patterns in the numbers, you know, that kind of thing.
And so that, when we publish that report and collectively all of our inputs into that report, eventually, you know, they deny that it was because of us, but it had been there for years, and 48 hours after we published it, it all came crashing down. All the images came down.
The company Jacques is talking about is Free. They are a massive French-based telecoms provider in Europe.
But the day that they took down all that content after a report came out, the Tor forums, they lit up with people panicking. I'd spent months and months uploading this material. My collection of images are gone. People asking for re-uploads all over the place. Like, it lit up, and everyone pretty quickly figured out what was behind it. But yeah, that was a... It's below the radar. A few people even know about this, but that was one of the single largest takedowns of content.
Okay, so let's rewind here a bit.
We had a history over a period of a year or two where we were notifying them repeatedly that we were finding links on the dark web or anywhere across the internet that was hosting CSAM. And it was confirmed, and we were issuing takedown notices, and they were piling up. And what we kept noticing is that some would come down, a lot would not, And then we would lose communication with the company. But we had this chain of emails that demonstrated that we kept making attempts to get the content down. Meanwhile, the links continued to proliferate. And if you look through on the Tor forums at the time, you would see that Free was the preferred hosting provider for this content. It was pretty much universal. And we've had other child protection groups who backed us on this when this all happened in the headlines.
So for all this to make sense, I need to introduce you to this guy.
So my name is Lloyd Richardson, and I'm the director of technology here at the center.
Lloyd is one of those guys who has made a name for himself. He can basically code anything, build anything. And he has this impeccable sense of style. So he's like this super smart nerd coder, but he also looks really good doing it. It's kind of annoying, actually.
And it's kind of like conspiracy theory level craziness. Like the amount of effort that was required for something that was so obvious to us was insane. And the fact that it was connected to a billionaire in France who is connected to one of the richest men in the world. Like it's beyond, like if you told me that story, I'd be like, I'm not believing that. That sounds totally insane to me.
Well, all right, let's get into it. So to explain this, I first need to talk about something Lloyd built, a tool called Arachnid.
A sort of what I'd call a naive sort of crawling process where the websites that we encounter where we see child sexual abuse material on them, what we'll do is we'll catalog all the links, the outlinks for those sites, and we'll follow them and then look at all the images on those sites. And if they match via perceptual hash known child sexual abuse material, then we'll follow links on those sites as well. So you'll only get a certain set of sites within rings, but when you do that with a bunch of different reports, you can surface a lot of child sexual abuse material.
You need to think of Arachnid as a complex scraper tool that crawls around the clear and dark web. And as it roams around all these areas, it collects information about child sexual abuse material. It basically works by logging links to and from known CSAM forums and repositories online. It logs every single little bit of data, and as new material shows up on these sites, it crawls back through and finds more links and logs those too. It can identify which internet or electronic service provider is hosting the content, how the CSAM is being routed around, and where it is being stored. It also logs the images and videos too, basically creating hashes so that it can match those hashes against other CSAM already in its cache. When Arachnid bumps into a piece of CSAM, it checks the image and video, and it basically compares it to its giant cache of already logged material. If the material is known to Arachnid, in that it exists already in its cache, it logs the incident, it scrapes any connected data, and keeps crawling. If the material is new or unknown, Arachnid sends it off to a human analyst at the center for confirmation. If the human analyst confirms that the material is in fact CSAM, Arachnid adds it to its cache. Here's the wild bit. Every time Arachnid bumps into a piece of CSAM and it passes the hash or human tests I just mentioned, it automatically sends a takedown notice.
So it's not always totally obvious as to where you might send a notice. So historically, we would send to hosting providers rather than what we term content owners. So in a circumstance like that, we'd refer to Imgur as the content owner. We'd refer to AWS as the hosting provider. And typically where we go first is the hosting provider. And this can cause turbulence with website owners because what we've learned is they typically don't want their hosting provider to know, even if like accidentally they're hosting child sexual abuse material. So say I'm an image hosting site that allows anonymous uploads of images from anywhere on the internet, from Tor exit nodes, from VPN, you're gonna have child sexual abuse material uploaded to your service eventually. If your hosting provider starts getting a lot of notices of that, they don't tend to like that very much, especially if they're a reputable company and they'll say, what are you doing to prevent this? So we will send different notifications. So we may get a request from a company saying, or a website owner saying, can you send me the notices directly and not send to the hosting provider, which in some cases we'll do depending on the relationship and how much we're seeing there or how egregious the service they offer is.
So Arachnid crawls around and basically starts sending out notices. And it sends out a lot of them. Hundreds of thousands of them. Between 2018 and 2020, it's tracked over 5 million pieces of CSAM, and it keeps logging more and more. So much so that there is a backlog of millions and millions of media files.
The IWF, the Internet Watch Foundation out of the UK, went to bat, and they also confirmed this. And I think that anyone who worked in this space would have been well aware of Free.
There was like a number of reasons why Free. So it's a sub-service. So they're a telecommunications company, but they had this service called dl.free.fr, where you could essentially upload large files, share the link for others to download it.
So it's like a drive or a Dropbox.
A very like 90s looking version of that, essentially. And the reasons that the offender community liked it was that you could upload to it from Tor. There was no JavaScript. So if you're an offender on these forums, you're not using JavaScript and you have Tor with the safest settings on. And dl.free.fr was one of the only ones that fit the bill for all of these things where they could upload. And to top it all off, they're like, things seem to stay up on here. I upload something and it's not coming down. It was the perfect host for this type of material.
So basically Arachnid is crawling around the internet and it starts bumping into a whole bunch of CSAM content. And it's all connected to this company called Free. Now, Free is a massive French telecom company owned by the Paris-based Iliad Group. And when I mean the company's big, the company made over $7 billion in revenue in 2020, and it was hosting tons of CSAM. In fact, according to Arachnid's logs, 48%, nearly half of all the CSAM the scraper was logging, it was hosted on Free's data storage service, dl.free.fr. It was about 18,000 archive files containing 1.1 million media files, all child sexual abuse material.
So we had tried to escalate to upstream providers of Free, but Free is way higher up in the hierarchy of network providers. So we're talking about a peering arrangement that is massive, massive with some of these companies. So we went to them with some of the evidence and had some of the back and forth where they would remove some of them. But we really hit an impasse because of how big the company was. Like, it wasn't some obvious bulletproof hosting company. This was a massive company that was unbelievable that this went on.
So in 2018, the Canadian Centre for Child Protection started sending takedown notices to Free and its server providers. Notifications that basically said, hey, our system detected child pornography on your servers. You probably should remove this. And according to the centre, Free dragged its heels. A lot. The team has nearly 2 years worth of back and forth emails between company representatives and basically showed the company was overwhelmed with the amount of takedown notices, and they just kind of stopped dealing with it.
The only thing that really led to taking action was this media article. What was interesting was they weren't really picking up on the news in France about this. This was UK Forbes that put the article out.
The article Lloyd mentions here, it was dropped in June of 2021. I've put a link to it in the show notes if you want to check it out.
I mean, like, it's insane that it even took that much effort to get the media to take this seriously because it's such an unbelievable story. I'm surprised it didn't have more uptake given who was involved with it. But and there's details that weren't even included in the Forbes article, like even further egregious details that would make them look terrible. But it also highlights the like lack of accountability. So the idea of companies are not people, or corporations are not people. So if I, Lloyd Richardson, on my home computer right now, had millions and millions of images. I had one or two images or videos of child sexual abuse material, I'd be going to jail. This company can host this material and
make available.
There's no consequence for them other than eventually the media shaming them, but no follow-up. There's no fines, there's no arrests. Nothing.
Within 48 hours of our report going out, 12 hours later, there was an article in Forbes. The face of the CEO, the owner of the company, was the headline. I think you saw that headline. And you can only imagine what alarm bells went off internally at that company. And within 48 hours, because obviously we were monitoring that file upload page pretty closely, as well as chatter online, about a day and a half later, we saw the thing had been shut down, locked down completely.
The dl.free.fr service, the 90s looking Google Drive.
We saw all the content, or almost all of the content, was deleted. All the links suddenly went dead. The reaction, the explosion on the Tor forums, on offender forums, discussing the loss of all this material. And all of this, after all this time, it came down to 48 hours. The problem was resolved. Yeah, there's a twisted irony in that.
Yeah.
So we often get, one explanation we get for why we're not removing content is because we're sending them too many reports. Like, think about that. So they have created a system that is so attractive to offenders as a tool for moving this content around. We notify them repeatedly every time this content pops up, and their chief complaint is that we're being over-notified, it's your fault, we can't take action because we're flooded with this material. It's like, I don't think that you've identified the right problem.
Exactly. I mean, according to experts, Free's issue was their data storage service and how it was basically accessible via the Tor network. Now, for all you neophytes, the term Tor has been thrown around a lot. I want to clear that up. The Tor network is basically one access point to a sort of hidden internet, often called the dark web. Websites on the Tor network don't get indexed by search engines like Google, and the websites that exist on that network are basically anonymous. In that, you can go out and create a site or a forum on Tor, and no one can trace it back to you. You can also use Tor to access the clear web. That's the regular internet that you and I use all the time. But when you use Tor, it basically hides your identity by running your connection through multiple nodes. So in Free's case, a user could use Tor to upload media to the Free data storage drive, something the vast majority of other similar services don't allow. So to be blunt, if you're a company providing a data storage service that can be accessed via Tor and basically allows for complete anonymity, such as not requiring like legit emails or phone numbers or other identifiable information, you're most likely hosting CSAM.
We get, you know, people know who we are, people discuss us on Tor. We're called the Antis, which is something, a term that we wear. It's like a badge of honor.
So Free took down all of that CSAM material. I need to note here that the company has since changed its policies. Users of the service are now required to be users of Free's other telecom services, which requires them to provide identifiable information, and it no longer allows for anonymous Tor access. Now, the offenders, well, you can imagine, they lost their shit. Entire collections of CSAM suddenly vanished. The archives were deleted. Links now led to dead pages. It was undoubtedly one of, if not the, largest purging of CSAM material from the internet. Jacques showed me a couple of forum posts that he and the team collected after the offender community realized what had occurred. They cursed the Canadian antis. Some said that this was censorship, while others, and I'm paraphrasing one particular offender's post here, that this was leading to a future dystopia. Some posts went even deeper. I have to be honest here, the way some of these offenders speak about children and child sexual abuse material, I was left to wonder about the warping of the human mind or soul, and how that can alter entire perceptions of not only right and wrong, of reality itself. This is truly a dark, dark place.
I want to get into the bad guys here. And what, like, in your work, I'm sure you guys read a lot of forum posts. You probably read a lot of, you know, content from the users and makers of the stuff. What is their, and I've done a lot of research into cults, so I can kind of imagine, but what's their view of reality here when it comes to this topic? How varied is it?
There's not one sort of single archetype for the offender community. So you'll see it in the different boards they create. Some of them, for example, don't allow hurtcore, and you'll see them get into like arguments about what constitutes acceptable material on the board.
A quick glossary check here. Hurtcore. It's CSAM content that includes children who are being physically abused, tortured, or are in pain.
So hurtcore is sort of the worst, the absolute worst of the worst. So there are some forums that will moralize child sexual abuse material and say like, oh, we're better because we don't do the hurtcore thing.
So the offenders attempt to justify their abuse. The faulty logic here is that one type of abuse is okay while other types of abuse is not okay. It's broken thinking. Abuse is abuse. Period.
And the distortion that they have is that the good guys that are out to remove children from these environments are distorting the child's mind. The child, if the child wasn't brought out by law enforcement, they would probably grow up to think of that as a good experience.
Right. It's the offenders, they have this nonsensical ethical reasoning. To them, it's the rest of the world that's wrong. It's a warped perception of a morality.
Almost universally, like once they're in those dark web forums, they're pretty warped by that point in time, or even the ones that have just started there start that period of like warping their brains. And it's interesting, once they start colluding like that, that's actually the real danger of the dark web forums, is that they're like open, like people can easily find them and basically further indoctrinate themselves into this community.
This reminds me a bit of the work I used to do when I would research cults. There was this indoctrination that occurred. It created an echo chamber or this system where people's minds were essentially bent to follow the words or teachings of a specific leader or ideology. Essentially, these forums tear away at the sort of standard regular moral fiber that we all agree to, and allows for people to alter how they perceive reality itself. And in this case, it normalizes for them the abuse of children.
And that's the real danger surrounding these.
You enter the echo chamber.
Exactly. The worst echo chamber you could possibly imagine. Actually, another sort of example of the moralizing of this side of things would be related to some of the... it's somewhat related to the capped type material.
Another quick glossary check here. Capping or capped material. It's basically when children are coerced to record sexual acts on a webcam, which can be live streamed or downloaded and edited, and then uploaded to CSAM repositories for sharing. Capping is relatively new in the CSAM world, but it's viewed with a sort of sick reverence because of the risk it involves. Cappers are more likely to get caught because they create new CSAM or deal directly with those who do. And all that leaves digital fingerprints for law enforcement.
Now, they have different levels of moralizing that behavior. So some of them will release personal information about the child so other offenders can find their social profiles and harass them and harass the family. Others will basically cap them and then not release it because they think, no, if they don't know, that's better off. So like there's not a specific, persona to all them, but what I'd say is they all of them, what they share is that they're all quite warped. That's
there's a lot of education that happens amongst the offending community online.
That voice is Steve Saar. Steve is the director of cybertip.ca. That is basically the national tip line for the center. So while Lloyd is the tech guy and Jacques is the data guy, Steve is the one on the front lines with survivors and witnesses and law enforcement. He and his team basically triage all the cases that come to the center, and they help get CSAM material pulled from the internet and essentially help survivors with getting their material deleted as much as possible.
They will tend to, there are things like handbooks and guides on how to sexual abuse children. They talk about the secure, safe ages for non-disclosure. They talk about how to go about the sexual abuse, how to groom a child. So there's a lot of this back and forth and a lot of almost like training of new people coming into this space. We've also seen things like, where they are, they're basically creating what they call a starter kit of child sexual abuse material to get people going who've never collected child sexual abuse material before. This is the starting point, and then you can go from there and begin to collect more child sexual abuse material. So there's a lot of cognitive distortions that occur on the dark web. There's a lot of obsessive behavior too. I mean, we see a lot of people on there who are obsessed with survivors 10, 20 years into the distribution of their abuse material, who are still trying to seek out information about them.
Oh, so like they'll see an image, let's say, of a child who's 12 or 13, and then they track them down as adults years later.
Yes, exactly.
You should have seen my face. I'm sitting in this boardroom with this team of people, and honestly, what they were saying surprised the hell out of me. This all goes beyond just offenders uploading and downloading content. There's a backwards psychology here, a twisted philosophical and moral framework. There's how-to guides that teach offenders how to collect material and stalk kids. I mean, this isn't some small little corner of the dark web. This is a full-blown subculture, a community of individuals who genuinely feel justified in some bizarre way in what they're doing. It's upsetting and appalling. And Steve and his team have to deal with this all the time. CyberTip's main function is to help survivors. The center provides supports. It directs survivors to counseling services and aids them in dealing with law enforcement. It essentially walks with survivors along a journey of having to deal with the exploitation that occurred to them and showing them that they're not alone. There's no shaming or guilting. You know, I want to pause here and just, I'll obviously put this all in the show notes, but if you are or you know someone who is a survivor, please go visit www.cybertip.ca. The team here is 100% on your side.
What we see probably from the vast majority of people is that they either have found something on the public internet that they believe is child sexual abuse material. They've come across maybe through a string of links or through a search that they've done. They've really hit on some material that they believe is child sexual abuse material through that that search or whatever process they've kind of gone down to find that. So then they'll come in through our toll-free line or through our online report form to provide us with that information. Now, there are certainly victims themselves who come into us. They know that their material has been distributed online. They're seeking support in getting that removed, and so we work through Project Arachnid, as well as through some proactive searching, to find that content that's been posted online beyond what the person has originally provided us, and we work to get that removed. We also have families coming in when they've had a child exploited, and they know that it's been posted somewhere. They'll direct us to that location, and then we can work through that.
Behind the scenes, a team of OSINT analysts begins tracking down information regarding the CSAM. They feed it to Arachnid, and they track down where it's being hosted. And essentially, they try to have as much of it taken off the internet as possible.
So the first step is obviously if they're dealing with a website report related to child sexual abuse material, they're going to launch that report. They're going to review what they can visually verify on the website itself. So they'll run through all the images. We do have a couple of automated triaging processes that check for known child sexual abuse material on those before our team even gets to view them. So that helps us out. But if it's unknown child sexual abuse material, we're going to review it. We'll make an assessment based on a number of factors to that indicate that it's someone under the age of 18 in that image. And then we will push that record of that media into Project Arachnid and into our report as well. So kind of attach both pieces. Now, when you're talking about doing some verification in terms of OSINT, we might look at some of the posts related to that image. What are the people saying about that? In certain cases, they will say that it's someone under the age of 18. They'll provide some information on that. Or there'll be information about the victim's name or the individual's name in the image. And we can do some searches on that to see if there's any further correlating information that suggests that they are under the age of 18. In most cases, though, we're taking the report at face value. So if the person themselves is coming in reporting, or it's a family member who's coming in reporting, or someone who says that they know that individual and that they are under the age of 18, we're going to take that information and send it off to law enforcement.
I wanted to see the operation here at the center, so the team took me on a tour. With about 80 staff utilizing two spaces, the place was bumping.
Do you want to go first the tip line?
Sure.
Okay, I'll come down.
I'll come down. Okay, just a second. I just need to make sure nobody's viewing content. Are you guys okay? Yeah, just give me a second.
What happened?
Are you guys alright? Oh, it's Ellie and the Beast over here. Hi. No, it's all good.
Okay, come on in. So this is the tip line area. This is the whole team. Yeah, you can come in.
Hi, everyone.
Come on in.
Walking in, it was a bit weird and surreal. This place and these people, they spend their days combing through some of the worst stuff on the internet. I've talked about vicarious trauma before on the show, and because of the line of work we do, we're often exposed as OSINTers to images and videos containing some pretty extreme stuff. But this is all related to kids who are being victimized for someone else's gratification and unhealthy sexual desires.
This is the group that works in Project Arachnid. They take the reports from the public.
These are the OSINTers.
This is the OSINTers, yeah, the group. They talk to youth, talk to families.
They're on the front line, dealing with the darkest things that an adult can do to a child. I had a question for them, from one analyst to another.
How is it? Is it just awful all the time? The mental just shit you have to deal with all the time would be pretty terrible.
Yeah, they take pretty good care of our mental health here.
The center provides a large swath of regular mental health supports for their staff, like monthly therapy sessions. Even Arachnid is built with this in mind. So as it detects known CSAM material, it loads the page with a sort of colored filter over the images, so it blurs it out for the analyst.
What the others said, that we're really well taken care of in terms of health and wellness, and that's hugely important because, like you said, the space is challenging, but it's also really rewarding because we do get to be on the phone with a parent or a child who might be really escalated when they come in to us, and then by the end of the call, they're grateful, they have a plan in place, they feel supported, they have sort of some tangible steps that they can be taking. So it is really rewarding in that sense too.
There are a lot of moving parts at the center. There are support teams, content teams, the folks who deal with the government and law enforcement. But there was one place that I really wanted to go, into the lair of the beast itself. I wanted to see Arachnid.
When you guys moved down here, we lost our lunchroom space, right? Which this was kind of the lunchroom, the rest area.
Yeah, right. We stole
the games. Yeah, so.
Actually, that was all part of a little scratch list we have there. Like after Free got shut down, we all got Kentucky Fried Chicken as a celebration. So that's the thing. So like, that's them scratched off the list. Now this we don't normally tell people about this on the tour, but I'll include you in this because it's funny. But do you recognize those pictures, Steve? Awesome. And that.
Yeah. That's from Billy Madison, right?
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Yeah.
You need to have a sort of dark sense of humor sometimes, and obviously understand the Adam Sandler, Billy Madison movie reference. But the team behind Arachnid has, well, Well, I wouldn't call it a hit list, but it's kind of a hit list. And I can't really share specifics, I was sworn to secrecy. But in a nutshell, there are names of services that they've taken out for hosting CSAM. And there's a list of names that are still targets. It's a sort of badge of honor slash joke. Gallows humor, maybe, would be appropriate.
All right. Let's, we got chicken and we got super chummy. Let's keep, is there any more or is this?
I think that's pretty, all the funny stuff. So I'll take you around to the Algraf, the piece.
Yeah.
It's,
we can't solve them here.
The rest of this is, you know.
Yeah, break room.
Regular
bathroom.
Office space. We can pop in here quickly too.
Is this the other side of the tech? This
yeah,
the...
exactly. So they're even more scrunched over here, I'd say. We'd like to have like a more open total basement, but
yeah.
It's an old building, and you know,
you can't do anything to it.
You make do with the space you have, so they don't have a KFC bucket over here, but it's
right.
Still.
Arachnid is powered by a massive team of people and a bunch of technology to keep it fed and watered and crawling around the worst corners of the internet. It costs a fortune to run, but it's worth it. And its home are these two rooms in the basement of an old residential school in Winnipeg. The weird twist of this, or the irony, maybe, I don't know, it's wild. But again, much like the CyberTip team upstairs, Arachnid is the sum of its parts. It's really the people who built it and do the work to keep it running. It's people who know that what they're doing is right and good, holding off the darkness as much as they can.
I can imagine working here would be tough, like knowing that, like how to word it, like you're fighting a battle that is seemingly like you're just never gonna win, right? Like it's like trying to defend against malware, like you're just never gonna win the fight. Like are you gonna, you know, how do you, like what's the mindset here?
Yeah, I'll jump into some of that. You touched on a few pieces there. There's the the gravity of viewing this material is obviously horrendous. Like we're looking at the worst sort of stuff. But the idea that I think we know that we're not solving the problem of child sexual abuse, right? Like child sexual abuse material is a symptom of that problem, and we know that thing's existed for all time. And much like malware. You know you're not, just because you can't fix the problem doesn't mean you don't do things to mitigate it, right? Like if malware went unmitigated, think about what things would look like right now. So, and I think there's a lot of, I won't call them little wins, I think wins that we see that are actually really uplifting, both for the analyst side and the tech team side of things, where we see these victories where we've removed a ton of child sexual abuse material, or we've dealt with a case with a specific victim where, you know, say you were a youth that had your images released. This is kind of different from the prepubescent child sexual abuse material, but adolescent, your boyfriend released your material when you were 14 years old. It showed up on a lot of adult pornography sites, and you kind of moved that to the side because that happened in the mid-2000s. Now you're an adult, you're looking for a job, and your employer Googles you. And what do they find? And we've seen plenty of cases where this has been obviously a real issue. So we've done a lot of work in that space in terms of, I'd say, we're careful when we say that. Like the idea of you can't necessarily remove all of the images related to you from the internet, but you can definitely put a dent in it to make things better. And I think we tend to focus on the, I'm not gonna call them smaller victories, because I think for a survivor, that's actually a really big victory. All of a sudden, I Google my name and I'm not seeing the child sexual abuse material of myself. That's actually a huge win. And we have made plenty of inroads like that, where I think those victories, not only for the survivor, but for the analysts, knowing that, you know what, the work that I'm doing actually makes a difference.
Right. I mean, it all sort of boils down to that old saying where all evil needs to triumph is for good people to stand by and do nothing. But there's sort of a bizarre twist here. A lot of this CSAM material isn't hosted on some dark, shadowy, unmonitored corner of the internet. It's hosted on the clear web, on file hosting services and drives that you and I can access. So why isn't it being taken down? why aren't companies paying attention to what's living on their servers? And it all seems to be a simple and complicated matter of jurisdictions and politics. Here's a few examples. One was mentioned to me while I was on the tour.
The other side where, you know, they're using the AI for, you know, generating images of the kids, of the unknown survivors and victims.
Right.
Yeah, so they just, you know, abuse the technology.
That was Sasha. He's in charge of the OSINT team upstairs, and he's seeing a massive spike in AI-generated CSAM material. For example, some offenders will find public profiles on social media where a parent may post a photo of their child, like harmless, like here's my kid at Christmas kind of thing. The offender will then use those images of children and then will use AI to merge them together and generate CSAM. But this is where the politics and the jurisdictions come in. Some countries don't necessarily view this as illegal, so law enforcement can't do much. Another example that was discussed where there's some websites out there on the clear web that collect images of children who are wearing minimal clothing. They're not technically nude, so in some countries, the government doesn't consider that exploitative, even though to reasonable people, it clearly is.
A lot of people have different views on how you approach child protection. Some of it comes from a moralistic point of view. Some of it comes from a more like public health response point of view. Some people come at it from a law enforcement justice point of view. Some people come at it from a child's rights, child protection point of view.
This is Jacques again. He's the data analysis guy.
So you have a lot of disagreements over what's the best response, the global response to this problem. And that in and of itself in our space is a huge challenge.
Can you get it? Like, what do you mean? Like, I mean, everyone's kind of on the same boat though, that they agree that it's all wrong.
To a degree, yeah. So we as an organization, like I was describing earlier, we pursue also content that isn't cut and dry illegal or that may not reach a criminal definition in most places in the world. Things that are just simply exploitative but would satisfy sort of a free speech First Amendment type justification for why it's not doesn't need to be taken down. So we go after those things aggressively. Our sort of guiding principle is, would a room full of reasonable adults agree that these pictures have no place on the internet? So that's the lens through which we view the problem and through which we take action on the problem.
The team provided me a few examples. Here's Lloyd, the tech guy.
So if you imagine a child who's endured child sexual abuse, it's not just the images of the abuse. Typically, alongside, there will be innocuous images. So the child playing at a playground, for example, included with these collections. Now, these other images, as Jacques said, they're not illegal on the face, right? So if you're an organization that's just, I only want to remove what's illegal and that's within my mandate, you're not really putting the needs of that child first. So, and I think any reasonable person would say, you know, we need to remove all of those images because what we see is those perfectly, they're normal images. If you looked at it, you'd be like, that's just a kid playing on a playground. We'd be like, yeah, but here's what that's connected to. What you see is offenders using those as breadcrumbs to where you can find information about that child.
So these innocuous images get posted publicly on the internet, say on large social media sites. And they essentially act as a sort of call to other offenders. They might have seen that image before, kicking around on a CSAM forum or in a collection, or that child becomes a sort of target of future predators. Companies, from social media corporations to hosting providers, well, let's just be honest, they put up quite a fight when asked to take down those types of images.
So there's layers even in between that we've sort of had to push industry along. And if you'll excuse the graphic example, there was an image that we were, or images, plural, a few years back. It was clearly an image of a child.
I'm going to jump in here because it's pretty graphic, but to sum up, there were a series of images that the center found that insinuated a child was recently engaged in a sexual act. There was bodily fluid present on their body and their face.
Any reasonable human being would look at this and be like, This is child sexual abuse material, quite obviously.
So the team collected all the evidence, created a report, and sent it off to where these images were hosted. And it wasn't some sketchy hosting firm, it was a larger player that you've probably heard of. The response from the company was pretty shocking. They basically responded by saying, "How do you know that this is actually bodily fluid? Prove it."
So there's this sort of funny space that you get in when you're like, his common sense has left the building, right?
There's an unfair reverse onus put on those trying to protect kids. So there's no barrier for anyone to put anything on your service, like demonstrate that you own the picture or that you can confirm who the person is. But if someone challenges that image with a very valid reason, all of a sudden you have to demonstrate all this paperwork. We want to see IDs. We want to prove that this isn't shampoo. And so you can imagine how difficult that is, right?
So in really simple terms, all of these tech companies, they've basically made it easier to upload CSAM than have it taken down.
And so it's not necessarily illegal for a company to be hosting child sexual abuse imagery on their servers. It's illegal when they become aware of it and they fail to take action. So the clock starts ticking when you become knowing of the presence of that content. That's the point at which a company can be held accountable if they don't take action. But if they are unaware of its presence and it's floating all over their servers, well, then they're not under a lot of laws technically responsible for that. And so then you can imagine that a potential pathway to a get out of jail free card if you're a company is to ensure that you don't look for it, to maybe have no reporting mechanism in place so you can't even become aware of its presence. And that's the game that's actually played in this space, and that's the game that we're perpetually caught up in, which is why we as an organization are constantly calling for actual forms of legitimate regulation in the space that would impose certain requirements on companies to ensure that they are looking for it, that they have things in place that block it, that if you are a file hosting service, that you block Tor exit nodes so you don't get a deluge of CSAM uploaded onto your service. So there's all these well-known risk factors that everyone knows are risk factors for having your service be exploited for CSAM. And we would like to see, basic expectations imposed on them by governments that make sure that they address those risk factors.
So it's just, the internet's just run by assholes. It's basically what it's
Well, it's historically been run as though it's the Wild West.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of actors in this space who want it to remain a Wild West. And as we can see, beyond just child sexual abuse, disinformation, misinformation, online harm, terrorist content, indoctrination, cults, like I could go on and on and on. We see the impact of that Wild West now, that the internet has reached a state of maturity that maybe wasn't obvious or present 10, 15 years ago.
There's an interesting sort of reverse onus as well that's sort of been built by the economics of data and the internet. So if I'm a big technology company and I accept a lot of uploads from people, I have a disincentive to verify my users, right? Do I want to like create friction where I show me photo ID for who you are so I know that you have the rights to put this image online? So they don't. They essentially, you click a box and away you go. They don't vet their users really at all. So I go and post images of someone else that are child sexual abuse material. Now, when we reach out for takedown notices, if it's an adolescent we're dealing with, we definitely get responses from big tech companies saying, "Oh, we're gonna need ID to remove this image. Like, you didn't ask for ID when it was uploaded, and you're not asking the uploader for identification after the fact. You're asking the victim to provide you, big advertising company, with personal information to remove an image." And an adolescent might not even have photo ID. Like, the whole process is insane. The barriers for removal should be much lower than the barriers for upload, and that doesn't exist right now. It's totally backwards.
Backwards is right. I spent several hours with the team at the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, the ANTIs, as they love to be called, and it was an eye-opening and honestly a bit depressing of an experience. I walked in with this general black and white understanding. and it was pretty limited in scope. Now I see that CSAM itself goes beyond just offenders. It ties in the dark web and the Tor network, but also giant social media corporations, hosting providers, and even electronic service providers that we use daily. It ties into legal systems that can't seem to understand the nuance around how this content spreads. It ties in politics, and even the personal, philosophical, libertarian ideologies of what the early builders of the internet thought the World Wide Web ought to be. And now, well, we're all dealing with the consequences of that. In a sense, we've all become complicit. Complicit in allowing these systems and technologies to develop as they have, and allowing them into our homes, where our children sleep at night. I want to thank Jacques, Lloyd, Steve, Sasha, and everyone I met at the center. They fight the good fight. Links to the center are in the show notes, and I've also included links to their donate page, if you feel like you want to help. For more, make sure you visit www.sapperlabs.com. Feel free to follow us on social media. The links are all in the show notes, as we love hearing from our listeners. Before I go, I would like to say a special thank you to Tierra for her production support on this episode. This has been Cloak & Dagger. I'm MJ Benias. Stay safe out there, and good hunting.